I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, roll call, everybody's here, and I'd like to welcome everybody that came tonight. Next is citizen input, so if you have something you'd like to address the council with, that is council business, if you come up to the mic and say your name and your address, I'll acknowledge you, and we'll give you 5 minutes to address the council. Okay, and we'll move to number one, approval of the agenda. Do I hear a motion?
One question on that. Before we approve it, can we pull B out of consent agenda and make a correction on that?
Yeah, when we get to consent, we can do that. Okay. So this is approval of the agenda, what you have in front of you. Does anybody... Do I hear a motion?
Make a motion.
Gina, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, any comments or discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, now consent agenda. Ken?
Yeah, just one quick thing on B. There's a small correction on the minutes for the workshop.
Yeah?
You know what it is?
Yeah, right here.
Yeah.
I can't be in two places at one time.
Right. It should have been the Mayor Pro Tem Ken Wilson instead of the Mayor Ken Wilson.
Ken Johnson.
Ken Johnson.
Yeah, the last page under adjournment, it should say, with no further items to discuss, Mayor Pro Tem Ken Johnson adjourned the meeting. Okay, so we got that. Any other items on consent agenda? Okay, do I have a motion to pass the consent agenda?
I so move.
Okay. Second. The two Kens, okay. We'll do that way. How's that? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes. Okay, modify 2003 Othello Housing Association agreement to make contribution in lieu of taxes. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. You've had this before you on two other occasions, so I'll just...
That'll cost you. Later.
Yep, $100.
That's called baptism under fire.
Probably Larry, isn't it? Larry did that, didn't he?
Okay. I'll just do a quick synopsis on this. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. There was a request from Othello Housing Associates to forego the $3,500 because they started paying property taxes of about $11,000. After doing some research, of course, I discovered that not all of that money was coming to the city. In fact, the amount that came to the city was just a little bit under $2,600. So I made a staff recommendation to restate the modification to the agreement to say that if the amount of property taxes that the city gets is less than the $3,500, then the housing associates would pay the difference. In this case, it would have been about $900. And if it's more, then we would just forego the $3,500. And so that was the staff recommendation. And the form of the motion is a move to modify agreement to make contribution in lieu of taxes between the City of Othello and Othello Housing Associates, LP, regarding the Larry Short plat as set forth in staff recommendation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from council? Okay, do I hear a motion to move to modify agreement to make contributions in lieu of taxes between the City of Othello and Othello Housing Association, LP, regarding Larry Short plat as set forth in staff recommendation. Do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Charles?
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, Ken Johnson, second. Any more discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, same for opposed?
Aye.
Okay, Gina? Okay, Main Street Scope of Project, Jay and
Before Jay comes up, I'm going to do, I want to do the financial part again. Because I know Councilmember Vasquez wasn't here when we did that. And it'll be a good reminder, I think, as well, for council, as a reminder of how we're financing the Main Street project. In Jay's presentation, he mentioned the $5,232,000, which is the full cost of the Main Street project that we are planning to work on and hopefully starting to use. And it's broken down into two sections. There's the Section A and Section B. The street portion, stormwater sewer overlay, is $3.840 million. And then the funding is in this form here. The councilmatic bonds here is 3.147295. It actually comes out that the bond issue would be for 3.2 because there are some costs associated with doing the bond issue. And the funding would come, part of that funding would come from street reserves, $100,000. And then the utility tax fund would pay, would fund $592,705,000. So that's the $3.840 million right there. Okay, that part right there. Then maybe it would be better if I would use this section over here. The part A is the water portion, the water main replacement, and it's at $1.392 million. And $900,000 of that would come from water fund reserves, and $492,000 of that would be an interfund loan from the sewer fund. And I set that up to repay it in 4 years at about $135,541. And of course that takes in interest because according to state law, if one fund loans money to another fund, it has to be the market interest rates. So that basically comes when we get to the $5.32 million. And this is how all of that's going to be funded. The traffic light portion up here is included in the bid as an option. So when we go out for bid, they'll bid all of this, and then they'll also bid the street lights. But that is not included in the cost. So that's something we'll look at later on. And then down towards the bottom of that screen, I showed the reserve funds. And it shows where the money's coming from. So up here I put a symbol, and then if you look down here, you can see where that money would be coming from. So it gives you an idea of what that looks like. The second page is the debt service schedule. And this is a preliminary schedule because until they tie up the bonds officially, the interest rate can change. So at the time he did this, this was the interest rate. I think it was 4.64% on an average. And what it looks like is the first 5 years here is it would be interest only on the $3.2 million until we would be, and in that period of time, we would be paying off our old debt. And then in 2016, the old debt is gone, and we pick up the principal and start paying the principal and interest on down to the end. And then it gives you a total for the whole package. And if there's any questions, I'd be happy to ask them, answer them. Taylor's got me all messed up.
Is there any questions for Mike from council? Is there any questions from the citizens? I'll give you an opportunity. If you'd like to address Mike on this, this is a pretty big project. Oh, okay.
I'd like to
go ahead, Jay.
Add to this just a little bit. Mike pretty much covered it, but I want to just come at it from a different angle. We've been working on the details of this for the last 2 months, and we're at a point now that we need to be going to bid. We've defined the project scope for the base bid of the Main Street Improvement Project of the estimate of $5,232. In that $5,232 is the sleeves under the street for the traffic signals. That's not in the $1,224,000. So in the base bid, the infrastructure will be in place, so we don't have to tear up the road, just so you know. If the bids come in low enough, we can add the traffic signals. That's two portions of the bid project. The third portion of this project is what we've been discussing with the beautification committee. And if you look at the back of your agenda memo, it talks about the Main Street improvements that Mike went over with, the traffic signals, and then down at the bottom is the beautification improvements. There's three options to that we discussed, and it was council's consensus that we bring back option number one for approval to go to bid with. And that's what we're looking for tonight, is we're looking for the main portion of the bid at $5,232, the alternate of $1,224,000, and then the beautification improvements option number one for $58,000. And that's what we would like to go to bid with tonight, and we're asking council to approve that this evening.
So what you're saying then is that the Main Street beautification improvements will be another separate bid on this project?
They will be the second alternate, the first alternate being the traffic signals themselves.
Okay. Any questions for Jay?
But doesn't that complicate things as it puts together quite a matrix, whether the street signal lights, street with signal lights, and beautification project, street with no signal lights with beautification project? Is okay,
what we would do at the point when the bids come in is we will come back to council with this is what our base bid was, which you originally approved, everything within that base bid. Then we'll give council the option of doing, depending on where the bids come in, of doing the traffic signals or doing the beautification portion of the project. That will be up to council at that time, depending on how the bids come in. If they come in well enough, you might approve it all. But at that point in time, it'll be your decision. It might be there's just enough left to do the beautification without the signals, or do the signals without the beautification. That'll be something we'll have to present when we actually know the dollars.
Discussion, questions? Okay, I do have a question on the motion. Do we need to have two options in that motion? Main Street, or is that already part of it?
A motion to approve the scope of work as presented.
Which would be the two alternates above the base bid to be included in the bid process. That doesn't mean we're approving that they get done, just that they are included within the bid process.
So that's written right? It is, okay. Okay, do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Second.
And we're motioning, I'm sorry, I should have said that first.
Option one.
Okay, let me do that again. Form of a motion. Move to approve the scope of work with option number one of the Main Street beautification improvements as an additional alternate. Do I hear a motion? Ken? Okay. Who was number two? And Dan? Okay. Any more discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed the same?
Aye.
Okay, Mark. Duly noted.
Thank you.
Okay. Lynette wanted to address the council for a second. Is that her? We want to thank you also for getting involved, because it's not always easy to get citizens to get involved. So, you know, as a council and as a mayor, I'd like to say thank you also back to you folks for all the work you've done. So, okay, resolution establishing the building permit fees. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Daryl Piercy, your city planner. In 2007, the city council for the city of Othello adopted a resolution which established the building permit fee table that's currently contained within city code. The resolution at the time did not include a valuation table. And what has happened in the meantime is that when you apply the building valuation to the permit fees, depending on the building valuation you use, the permit fees can vary significantly. To give you an example, the fee or the valuation schedule that's being proposed for you for consideration this evening sets a range of about $95 a square foot to $75 a square foot for single family residential construction. But a fee valuation table that is adopted by the International Code Council sets that same valuation at a range from $125 to $135 per square foot. Plugging that valuation into your fee table, which you adopted, can vary the cost of a building permit pretty dramatically. So what we're recommending to the council this evening is that in addition to the fee schedule that you've already adopted by resolution, you modify that to include a valuation table and utilize a valuation table that's based on the ICBO, the International Code of Building Officials, valuation table that was established in 2002. That again sets that range for building valuation, which more reflects the actual building costs in Othello and in the surrounding communities. A number of communities across Washington State use that 2002 valuation table. Examples locally are the city of Ephrata and the city of Moses Lake, although I believe Moses Lake is either reviewing that fee valuation table or perhaps have already modified it. But most rural communities, small cities, have established that 2002 as a benchmark for valuation. And in Washington State, that seems to accurately reflect the actual cost of construction. And the table is pretty uniform throughout in terms of reflecting actual costs that we're seeing. We believe that the ICC valuation table that has been utilized for the last year or two in Othello really inflates the overall value of construction and results in significantly higher building permit fees for the building community and for the residents after they purchase those homes. So before you for consideration is a resolution that adds into the existing fee schedule the valuation table so that there's no question as to which valuation table should be utilized when calculating permit fees. And again, the feeling is that this valuation table that was adopted by the International Code of Building Officials more accurately reflects the rural nature of our construction and our value within the city of Othello. Happy to respond to any questions.
So this would, like with Safe Built, they'd have to use the same table then?
Well, if under Safe Built's contract, it actually spells out the ICC valuation table. So if Safe Built is you're the firm doing your building permit review, you would need to modify their contract to then adopt this valuation table. But it is part of the city code, and I think at that point they would either have an obligation to accept it or reject it and just not choose to do that plan review in your city.
Okay. Other questions from council for Darren?
Yeah, I have. Huh? The only thing I have is it still seems a little subjective in between just a wood frame at $67 versus quote good at $92. I mean, that's almost a 30% differential that with real no definition of which one you're going to pick.
There's actually within the narrative of the ICBO, it gives some explanation of that. So there is guidance associated with how you value and how you refer to that construction. Average construction, for example, probably would not be construction that you'd see in the Pacific Northwest for the simple reason that we have snow load issues that you wouldn't have, say, in Southern California or Arizona. There are issues regarding wind load and seismic loading that are built into structures that raise the value for construction in this area. So when you use that guidance, you're probably going to be at the higher end of that scale under most circumstances for new construction. But for remodels and for garages and for other types of construction, you may be in that average category. But again, you'd look to that that table for guidance. But this certainly sets, I think, a much better set of parameters that are more reflective of what actually is taking place within the building industry locally.
Is this supposed to be reflect the value to build the house or the value of what the house sells for?
This is the construction costs, including all labor.
But no profit. I mean, can I go look at county tax records and say this house sold for this new house sold for this much divided by the square foot, and that's what the valuation for this should be?
No, you're not going to get that. It's not a fair comparison because the valuation of the sale includes the land, it includes all the utilities, it includes the profit, it includes the overhead, and I mean there's just a lot of other additional things that are added into the cost of a home for purchase versus the construction cost of the home.
So that's all this is supposed to reflect is construction costs.
Construction costs and overhead.
Okay.
So then this would be used by the county for the new tax roll on your home?
No. This would be used by the city to establish the valuation for the purpose of calculating the building permit using the permit fee formula that you've already adopted. The county uses a different process for determining valuation. That's through an appraisal process, and it's based on comparable sales and has nothing to do with construction valuation.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, do I move to adopt the resolution establishing permit fees and adopting a valuation table for the city of Othello? Do I hear a motion?
I'll make that motion.
Ken Johnson?
Second.
Second, Don? Regina? Any other discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, that passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daryl. Which one's next? Consideration of inspection services. Second here before we get started. I guess before we get started for the council, does it bother the council if Daryl sits in here over discussion, or would you rather have Daryl leave the room? Everybody's fine with that? Or does he need to be
in? He might be able to, in fact, answer some technical questions that may benefit the council.
Okay.
If there are questions.
Okay. Then let's move forward then.
Thank you. City Council has before you a consultant services agreement with the Permit Center. This is the third time we've discussed this. And basically the bottom line is efficiency and service to our community and a cost savings to the city of Othello. Now, how we get there, we went through at our last meeting at the workshop and we went through the numbers, and I believe it was a consensus of the council to move forward with a percentage-based contract, which you have before you. The outstanding questions from the workshop were, we discussed the fee table that you just adopted, but you hadn't seen that. You did not see that at the last meeting. So you asked for us to go through that with you, and that's why Daryl did that tonight. You also asked, will the agreement identify a basic plan, a fee for multiple permits? That's a cookie cutter concept. If one builder wants to build the same house 10 different times, is he going to be subjected to 10 plan review fees? And this contract specifies no, there's one plan review fee as long as they're all the same. The other question council had was, what if a home builder has a signed contract? And this goes into your square footage, Mark, that we talked about last time. Signed contract, will this valuation be honored? Yes, but there is some discretion from the city. For example, if somebody comes in with a contract for a $34 square foot building, and we know it should be around $90-$95 a square foot, there'll be some discussion and negotiations on that term. But it will be looked at. So I think we've answered all your questions and you've seen the contract before. With that, we'd ask you to adopt the consultant services agreement with the Permit Center.
Okay. Eamon, could you kind of explain that $40 per hour for travel pay there?
So thanks for bringing that up, Ken. There, on page 2 at the very top, it says travel time should be at the rate of $40 per hour or portion thereof spent traveling. That does not mean travel from another city to Othello to conduct the inspection. It does not mean travel from City Hall to an inspection site to conduct the inspection. What that means is if the permit center is going to inspect and review a project that is ongoing with Safebuilt, for example, if we make that transition to cover that, it's $40 an hour. But we're not anticipating any of that, but that's in the contract just to cover that transition. But we're looking at phasing out with Safebuilt and starting fresh with the permit center. Thanks, Ken. That's an important.
Thank you.
More other questions by council?
Do we have days on the contract to opt out with Safebuilt?
Yes, and we'll put them under notification. If the council agrees tonight, we'll put them under notification, and then we will start with the permit center as soon as we get their insurance in hand, and then we will phase out Safebuilt over the next 60 days.
Okay, I have a letter here from Eric Olson. He's a realtor and builder. I'd like to express my opinion on a few of the items on the agenda for tonight. I urge you to adopt a fair fee schedule for building permits. I also would urge the council to vote in favor of removing Safebuilt for another provider of inspection services. So he wanted that read. Is there any other comments from the audience? Okay. Any more discussion? So do I hear a motion to approve the contract as presented?
I'll make that motion.
Mark?
Second.
Dan? Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay. That passes.
Thank you.
Sole source lighting contract. Jay.
Good evening again. In 2003, the city applied for a grant to upgrade the Othello Ballfield lighting. At that time, we upgraded two of the four fields there with an option at a later time to add lighting to that, poles to the opposite two fields, and finish the lighting project. At that time, Musco Lighting was chosen for the supplier. And during the 2010 budget process, we've come to that point where we want to upgrade the rest of it, and council has approved $165,000 to upgrade the lights. Before we can purchase the equipment, council must determine that this is a sole source purchase. And due to the fact that we have Musco lights there and they're being upfitted, we must use Musco products at this time. And to declare it a sole source purchase, there's RCW 3904280, which is attached, that gives council that option to do so. The way this is going to work is the city is going to purchase the equipment and then the installation is going to go to bid once this is approved. But we will do the purchase separate from the bid because it is sole source. We can obviously do that, and that's a cuts out a profit for basically the contractor is what it does. And we're recommending that we approve the Musco Lighting as a sole source provider as indicated in 3904280 for the purchase of the remaining lights and poles at Lions Park. Do we have any questions for this one?
Go ahead, Ken.
Do we know what portion of that 165 is going to go to that lighting as far as the material wise is concerned?
Parts are going to be approximately 55 to 60,000.
Wow. We've got approximately 100,000 of the install on that, right?
Correct. That's engineers' estimates at this time.
So Musco, we're okay with warranties and everything by buying from Musco, but then having somebody else install it?
Yeah, what happened last time when we did this, it worked the exact same way. We chose a light provider, basically, through a council action, not sole source, because there wasn't anything there. We chose Musco through a bid process. Then we went out to bid for a contractor to do the installation, and Musco assists the contractor in the aiming and the installation to make sure it's all done right. And we have had no issues with the installation warranties whatsoever with this lighting system. It's worked really well for us.
And this, I can't remember now, but this is to do the remaining two fields?
Yes, which would be the northwest field and the southeast field.
Yeah, and then that would be also the back satellites to do the front side of each field, right?
Correct. The northeast field and the southwest field, the poles are already there and lit. We're going to be using the back side of those poles, and we're just adding poles to the outside, the outfield of the northwest and the southeast.
And the cost of installation should be, I got to believe it's going to be less because you have power there now in every area you need.
Yeah, and we're currently right now looking at the power that's provided. All the wiring is in the poles currently that are there. But there isn't outfield wiring currently right now, and we might have to upgrade the service panel.
But it still exists, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
So have we heard anything from the people that planned the lights? Charles, everybody seemed to be happy with those lights?
Oh, those lights are...
Are they?
Yeah, but the sad part about the new lights, they made the old lights look so bad. It's like looking at something new and something old. You don't want everyone to go to the old side. Mm-hmm.
Well, good. That's what we want to hear. That's a lot of money.
Does this affect...
This is a budget carryover item from last year.
Right, part of it. Didn't we budget, I don't know if it's in this amount, to light the new basketball court?
No, this is a separate amount, but it will be bid separately. I mean, it'll be all bid together. We're putting Musco's lighting, the ball field lighting, tennis court lighting, and then lighting in Kiwanis Park all together in one bid, but tonight while we're here is just to declare a sole source purchase. All the other lighting has been approved already in the budget over and above this.
Okay. So those won't necessarily be Musco lights then?
No.
Any other questions for Jay?
The timeline still, if everything goes in order, it's probably June.
Yeah, it depends on the purchase now. I have to get this approved before I can actually get a lead time on it.
Okay, then do I hear a motion to approve Muscat Lighting as a sole source provider for the remaining lights and poles at Lions Park Ball Fields? Charles?
Second.
Mark, second. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay, it passes.
Thank you.
Well, number five update, Jay.
Hey, there's not a lot more to say than what we said last time, but basically on March 12th, Well 5 suffered a failure. It came apart and fell down the hole. We've had a contractor on site attempting to pull this out, and not to a lot of avail. We've had 70 feet of column and 120 feet of shaft that's come out of that hole. The contractor has been down the hole. We estimate about 30,000 pounds still in the bottom. They tried a little over that pole, 32,000, I believe, something like that, and nothing happened. They doubled up the blocks and tried pulling again at the rate of 76,000 pounds, and still nothing happened. What they want to do is retool and pull even harder next time and see if they can get something to break loose and come out of this hole. What we handed to you tonight is an email that I received today from Chris Schneider of Schneider Equipment explaining the details of this. But basically what has happened is approximately 630 feet of equipment has went down that hole, fell a distance of 200 feet. The bowls are 12 inches in diameter, and they went into a 12-inch diameter hole, open hole, and hit the bottom at a high rate of speed. We don't know what's down there right now until we can get a harder pull and determine what's going on. But the contractor is indicating it's very possible that we've had a cave-in and that we might not be able to get this out of there, just so you know.
Bummer.
Within 2 weeks, different equipment has to be brought in to attempt this. And minimum we're looking at right now, rental on this other equipment, is approximately $10,000 minimum. And if it don't come out, then we have our what-ifs from there. Currently, the rest of the equipment that's in there is above water static level, so we can't even set a new pump down the hole in the water and leave what's left in there. It's in the way, and it doesn't look good at this point in time.
Can I mention insurance, Jay?
Yes, we're giving updates to WCIA because this will be an insurance claim on this well.
Does Snyder have a camera they drop down there, or do they have access to that?
Yes, they do have a camera, and they did go down the hole, but it gets to a point where the spiders, I don't know how many council members remember the spiders that we brought in mm-hmm. several years ago and showed to it. They can't get the camera past that point. So what we're hoping to do is they're going to get some vibration bottles in there and try to bust everything loose and bring it up, and even if it starts breaking chunks and pieces out and we can pull it out that way, we're further ahead. But at this point in time, we can't get past the top of what's there with the camera.
I thought the casing is what lined the hole. Why are they pulling that out?
You have your casing lines the hole, your column is the pump column, and then within inside of that is the shaft with the spiders.
Right.
So casing, column, and shaft.
I thought they just left the casing there and pulled it all out in, through.
The casing stays there. They're trying to pull the column out, the actual column inside of the casing. The casing is what holds the hole.
I thought you said they had so many feet of casing out.
No, they have so many feet of column out and shaft. I'm sorry if I misspoke there.
Okay.
What size crane are they thinking about hooking onto that with now?
They're going to use the same crane. They actually have a four-line snatch block on there that they can go to six. And they have a stiff leg on it because they were lifting the end of the crane up into the air. So they had to put a stiff leg on it, make an A-frame. And they have a lot more pull if they put two more lines on. There's also the possibility of losing their equipment with that much pull.
Yeah, I was looking at that the other day, and I just kind of wonder if they shouldn't have a bigger piece of equipment sitting in there on the top.
Well, right now they're able to pull 76,000 pounds. There's only 29,000 down the hole, and they can double that again.
That's only a little over twice of what you're pulling there, and the angle that you're pulling it in. I mean, you're not lifting that much.
Yeah, we're pulling 76,000 currently, 30,000 pounds worth of equipment. And we can double that again with the full load.
So is that a straight hole?
Excuse me?
Is that hole straight?
Yeah.
It is. That is actually a straight hole.
Yeah.
Was that?
It was. I'm not sure there's a cave.
We don't know what's down there. I mean, just in all honesty, we do not know what's going on down there right now until we get this other equipment in and try to get something to move. I was actually on site when everything busted and come apart at one point, and it made me jump. They're pulling hard, and it did not move.
So the $10K you're about to spend is in your budget, then, I take it?
It's, well, currently that is within our budget. I'm going to try to get a closer cost of existing with this contractor right now. But this will have to be a budget amendment, I'm sure.
Okay. You talked about the window, Jay. Five versus six.
We're trying to go to bid on well six. May, I believe it is when we're trying to do this. But we will not be able to shut well six down and go to bid until well five is back up and running. Well five is one of our major producers. And we, coming into the season, we're not going to be able to do this until then. So we're going to have to be in touch with CDBG and check on the funding if we can get an extension of that $312,000 grant that we got to do the repair work for well six. But we can't afford to have six down going into the summer.
Seems like on the other wells we've had shafts, quote, break before. How come the wells didn't, or the pumps didn't, or the bowels didn't drop down then?
Because your column actually holds the holes, and the shafts inside is just like your drive line.
So this is actually the shaft and the column split somewhere.
Yeah, we believe that the column possibly come unscrewed or broke. We don't know yet.
So
if
this
column lets go, then everything falls.
Common to them, or is this very rare? Could you tell by their conversation with them?
It doesn't happen a whole lot. I mean, not for us, not the column, but it has happened where columns have come unscrewed. They're indicating that this happened while it was running. Course, probably more than likely during startup or shutdown. we won't know until we get it out and actually have the well driller, us, and Gray and Osborne are scheduled to be there once we do get it out, if we can, to determine what exactly happened, give our best guess.
Any other questions for Jay? Okay, thank you, Jay.
Thank you.
Consideration of Planning Commission recommendation, Cantu rezone. Daryl?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Once again, Daryl Piercy, City Planner. Before we begin on this matter, I think it's important just procedurally to talk about the process for rezoning, because we don't get those before the council every day, so sometimes we forget. The Planning Commission conducted a public hearing on this application for rezone, and also true for the next issue that you'll have before you, another application for rezone, on March 15th of this year. Under state law, you're only allowed to conduct a single public hearing on a land use application such as a rezone. So therefore, what the council is conducting this evening in follow-up to the Planning Commission public hearing is a public meeting. And your decisions, as you move forward in looking at this recommendation from the Planning Commission, your decisions are to be based on the public hearing record that's before you and contained within your packet of materials. That includes all of the background information, the staff report, the letters and testimony from the public that were contained in the file that were presented at the public hearing, the minutes from the Planning Commission, their discussion and their deliberation, and ultimately their recommendation. This is not an opportunity to take additional public testimony, since this is a public meeting, not a public hearing. And so therefore, your decision process will be based on the record that's before you. If you feel the record is insufficient, you can remand it back to the Planning Commission for additional public hearing and comments, and they would make, again, a recommendation. But this evening is a public meeting for your deliberation and consideration of the Planning Commission recommendation. You're certainly welcome to ask questions of both staff and of each other in your deliberations, and come to your conclusions based on responses to those questions if you feel that's necessary. The issue before you on the first rezone this evening is an application that was filed by Mr. Oscar Cantu, and he was acting as agent for Midwest Carriers. The request is for a rezone from C1 to Industrial 1, or I-1, and the site is located the very east of town, located in this area of C1 zoning. This is Highway 17. Walmart located in this area, just to give you some perspective of where this property is. It's across the highway, recently annexed into the city, and when it was annexed into the city, it was zoned C1. As I indicated, the Planning Commission conducted their public hearing on March 15th. They took testimony from the public, and upon that testimony and closing of the public hearing, they deliberated and have recommended denial of this rezone request to the City Council. Now, I think it's fair to point out that in the course of that discussion, there was at least one letter that suggested that while industrial zoning was not appropriate for this site, you may want to consider C2 zoning, which would in fact allow for truck parking, which was the main basis for the request for the rezone, but would not introduce some of the other elements of industrial zones that the I-zone would provide for. The Planning Commission actually gave this some consideration, and within their motion voted to suggest that they would consider the C2 zoning, but in reality, the issue for C2 zoning was not before them for consideration. The application was for industrial zoning, and therefore that's what they had to consider, and their vote was to recommend denial of that industrial zone. Should the applicant want to come back, if the council were to choose to deny the industrial rezone, come back before the Planning Commission with a new application for C2, that would have an opportunity to go through a new public hearing process to be properly noticed so that the neighbors could respond to this request of a C2 zone. But the matter before you this evening is specific to the application, which asks for a rezone to industrial zoning. And that is what the Planning Commission has based their recommendation on, and the information that's contained within the file and is available for your review and deliberation. Be happy to respond to any questions.
Questions? Mark?
Not doing a lot of research into the zoning. My understanding, C1, they're allowed to work on trucks but not park them?
You can have things such as auto repair, vehicle repair, but you cannot, in the C1 zone, as we've discussed several weeks ago, you cannot have commercial truck parking as a designated use in the C1 zone. And that's what this applicant was proposing to have. In fact, the rezone was a result of an enforcement action that was undertaken by our enforcement section, and that led to the request for the rezone.
And C2 zoning allows truck parking?
As a conditional use. So they would need to go through a conditional use permit process in a C2 zone, which is an application that goes before the hearing examiner for consideration and determination.
But I-1 would allow, among other things, commercial truck parking?
Correct.
What I-1 is, it would be like the plants out here could be built there? Is that the I-1?
I-1, yes. It's a very intense industrial zone. And again, once you rezone a piece of property, even though the intent of the property owner is to do one thing,
right,
it opens the door for any use that's allowed within that zone.
So the people that live out there just east of here don't want that kind of activity in that parcel?
Well, I can't speak for them directly, but based on what I read in their testimony, it's clear that they're concerned about the impact to their property and property values should an industrial zone be approved on land adjacent or nearby.
Any other questions?
So right now, currently, they're not even supposed to be parking their trucks there.
They're currently under a request to come into compliance, an order from our code enforcement section that would require the removal of the trucks that are parked there currently, yes.
But they don't have a business license currently. They're in the process of looking at one, but they're saying they're not in operation yet.
But and the Planning Commission never said, hey, maybe you should try C2 versus...
Well, the Planning Commission talked about the C2 because it was actually recommended or suggested in some of the correspondence that came to them, and in the course of their deliberation felt that they could consider the C2 zone, but because the application was specific to the industrial zone and because of the noticing requirements identified the rezone request as industrial, they could not make a determination or a recommendation for a C2 zone without having that matter before them properly published, properly noticed, and having the public an opportunity to comment on the possibility of a C2 zone versus the industrial zone. So that matter could go back to the Planning Commission should the applicant choose to request that through a new application if you were to deny the industrial zone.
But they have to go through the whole process.
They would have to go through the whole process, and we would have to go through the whole process of notification of adjacent property owners and the whole public notice element that is part of an application such as this.
So is the rezone for the whole parcel or just their portion?
This is for 2.7 acres. It's a single parcel in this area of a very large...
whole western.
It's not this whole section here. It's a 2.7 acre section out of that. There's a number of different tax parcels located within that block of yellow, and this is a 2.7 acre site. It happens to be at the border of the city limits.
It seems to me that what is it zoned right now?
C1.
C1. Okay.
Same as Main Street.
Okay. Didn't there a big discussion about 2 years ago about a motel coming in there, service station, restaurant, all that sort of thing? What's going to do to that application? I think they even made application at one time. Did they not? What's it going to do that application if you change that to industrial zone and put an industrial plant right next door to the motel? Are you going to read it?
The motel, there's a fueling station located in this location that's in the process of being refurbished and is intended to be reopened. The hotel location was generally near the highway in sort of this location. This property is located on the eastern boundary. The question, what impact would industrial zoning have on a C1 retail area with a hotel? Potentially, it could have a significant impact. It all depends on which use they choose to place within the industrial zone. Now, would a trucking parking area have significant impact? You know, perhaps not. Truck stops and hotels seem to go together frequently, but it isn't just the truck stop that or the parking that's the concern. It's the, all of the other uses in the industrial zone that would therefore be allowed if it was to be rezoned.
So all of that yellow then is C1?
Yes.
Down Main Street. So we're just spot zoning that.
That was one of the comments that was made before the Planning Commission, that if this were approved, it would represent a spot zone. Spot zone technically has a different definition than that, but I think commonly people refer to a single parcel being zoned as a spot zone, although that doesn't necessarily meet the legal definition.
Then would this other property be open to that? Would that be a precedent for some of this other property down Main Street?
Well, any time that you change zoning, it could lead to an argument that, well, you've changed this zoning, now you should change my zoning. So that it does open the door for that, although I don't think it creates a legal precedent in that regard. But I think in terms of someone's expectations, it changes their expectations.
So we denied Mr. Rodney's request for a C2 zone, Rodney De Leon?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We denied his request.
Well, actually, he did not have a request for a rezone. He wanted to change the language in the code to allow for commercial parking in the C1 zone. So you denied that request to allow parking of commercial vehicles in the C1 zone, but he did not have a formal rezone request. That was one of the options available to him, but he chose not to exercise that option.
Well, I can understand why Mr. Cantu, at least what I'm hearing here, would apply for an industrial one, because even if he goes C2, I understood you to say he still has to go through a hearing examiner, which is, I understand, kind of expensive, and there's a possibility he could still be denied parking his trucks there, even if it goes C2.
You're correct.
And the other question I have, and I didn't understand the answer I received earlier today, and Mr. De Leon opened this can of worms, why does he get to park his one truck on his property if it's C1?
We're continuing to work on that as an enforcement action.
Okay. Ken, did you have a question?
Oh, just a comment, I guess, more than anything. Well, I think the original intent of that whole area out there was for C1, for motels and the like that's up and down, that what you would get up and down the highway. And I think once you open up a can of worms there and starts, like you say, spot zoning this, you're going to add more problems with that. And then on top of that, you're talking about Main Street, Cunningham Road, whatever you want to call it. It's just an extension of our Main Street. And you're looking at a situation there where you're cutting a piece of that pie right out, which is directly next to our Main Street. And I don't really think we want to do that. I think we need to keep it as C1.
We don't want to push business out of this, out of Othello either, though.
Yeah, we talked about moving trucks outward, and then when they want to move outward, we tell them they can't. So we got to figure out where we're going to put them.
If there's going to be a hotel in there, you're going to have trucks there anyway, or what are we going to say? You can't have guys that are driving trucks, you can't go to these hotels?
Fueling stations, motels, they all go hand in hand with trucks. You're going to have trucks there. You're going to have them there day and night. And they're going to park there, and they're going to sleep there, and they're going to spend money at that gas station. I can honestly tell you, I know that firsthand.
Yeah, I guess we've got to remember we're talking about an industrial zone here. So
that's what
he's requesting. So we want to keep on the industrial zone part of it, and then let Mr. Cantu decide what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. But so do I hear a motion?
I think the dilemma is both these gentlemen are right. It's just that how is this, quote, pushed out? You know, Mr. Kaler thinks, well, this might be pretty close to being in town someday, and for you, it seems pushed out now, so I'm not sure if we're going to go out there and if that's going to be town or not, or if that's a good spot for trucks.
It's a lot closer to, you know, I'm a lot closer to town than that is.
That's true.
By a long ways. So, I mean, if town will get there, but it's going to be, it's not going to maybe be in our days.
I saw a hand in the audience. I can't remember where I saw it. Go ahead.
What I would like to do. Mayor Tim and the council, I'm on the planning commission. As a matter of fact, I'm chairman of it. I'd like to have you people consider having us go one more time to Mr. Cantu when if he brings it back, and we'll have more information for you to recommend on the next time we'll meet here in another week or two, Beryl, is that right, with the planning?
Correct.
Yeah, I'd like to see Mr. Cantu come back and then try to go over the C1 or the C2. But maybe we'll have our five members there and we'll be able to give you people, we'll recommend to you, the council, what our findings are at that time. If you would consider waiting for another couple weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is.
So you're asking us not to pass a motion?
Motion would be to remand to the Planning Commission for further consideration.
Okay.
And that contains all the maybe citations and all that, is that correct? But so it gives time to play this thing out versus...
Yeah.
But just to be clear, the Planning Commission can only take action in terms of the recommendation on the industrial zone request without the submission of a new application and proper public notice so that the neighboring property owners who have expressed an interest in this matter will have an opportunity to properly respond to a C2 request if that's the case.
Right.
So the possibility of the Planning Commission taking this up at their next meeting is not possible because there would not be sufficient time to accept an application and provide appropriate public notice.
So if we deny I-1 tonight, he's back to square one.
Yes.
How long do you have to have that notice up?
We have to provide notice at least 14 days in advance of the hearing. That includes a public notice in the newspaper as well as direct mailing to adjacent property owners.
And a sign on property?
And a sign on the property.
It just has to be there 14 days?
Well, yes.
So
it
puts us a month out.
And then it has to line up with the Planning Commission meeting. Yeah.
So realistically, the first opportunity for the Planning Commission to consider a C2 zone request would be June. May.
What does C2 zone says you may have truck parking, but you have to go through the hearing?
It says that it's a allowable use subject to obtaining a conditional use permit.
And is that open to public testimony?
Yes.
When they go to get that?
Yes, it goes through a public hearing before the hearing examiner. Now, I will say that the specific elements of a conditional use permit, the requirements, are pretty clearly spelled out in the code. So if someone were to demonstrate they can meet those requirements, the hearing examiner should provide for the conditional use permit. It generally is very black and white without a lot of emotion through the hearing examiner process because the requirements of that process are pretty clearly spelled out in the code. You meet the code, you get the conditional use permit. So even though there is public testimony allowed, the public testimony would have to identify how the code is not being met, not, gee, we don't want C2 zoning, or we don't want trucking parked next to us. It really is a more precise form of review than kind of your average land use issue.
Hypothetically, we go through all that. Do we have to approve C2 before it goes to the hearing?
Yes.
Okay. And then it's out of our hands?
Yes.
So to move on with that, we need to deny this investment.
Yes.
So I would move to confirm the recommendation of the Planning Commission to deny the request to rezone from C1 to Industrial 1.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Gina? Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same? Okay, it's denied. Okay. Consideration of the Planning Commission recommendation, Michael rezone. Daryl, again.
Again, this is another rezone that has gone through a public hearing process at the Planning Commission, so the same procedure would apply as the last application where we're conducting a public meeting and you're using the record to use as a basis for your decision making. This item is on property that's located in a different area of town. It's actually located on the other state highway. Sagestone Developments in this location, 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 phases. And the property in question is generally in this location. It is a combination of zones, and we'll go into that detail when I go to my other frame. So this is actually a series of rezones that take a variety of different properties and change the zoning. The first proposal is 24.79 acres rezoned from C1, and the staff report and ordinance should say C1 and R2 to R4. And that's this larger piece of property in this location. This portion right here is currently zoned R2. And this portion right here is currently zoned C1. The next section is 6.9 acres from commercial C2 to residential 4, and that's actually the piece of property located here. And the third portion of this is a 2.2 acre site from residential R2 to C1. And I need to move this just a little bit more so you can see that. It's this small piece right here. And so we have the large piece, 26 acres, or 24.79 acres in this location, a smaller piece, 6 acres in this location, and the smaller piece, yet 2.2 acres in this location. Now this is being changed to C1. This is also C1, so this would create a block of land near the intersection that would be C1. The remainder of the site would be rezoned to R4, and that would allow for a higher density residential development. But all of Sagestone divisions 1 through 5 are also zoned R4. And the purpose of the R4 zoning was not to build high-rise apartments in this case, but to build smaller single-family residential lots. And it allowed for that density within the R4 zone that the developer in the Sagestone case was looking for. As we had in the previous application, this matter was before the Planning Commission on March 15th, in which they conducted a public hearing. There was no public testimony taken for this application, either in advance in writing or verbally at the hearing. The Planning Commission deliberated and is recommending approval of the rezone request as submitted. We did have written comments from a variety of agencies, including the Washington State Department of Transportation. They did identify the issue of potential noise abatement in the event of residential development, but they would address that at the time of residential development, not at the rezone stage. Be happy to respond to any questions.
Well, I guess I have a comment. The C1 disappeared along the highway except for this little corner down here. I mean, I just drove down to Portland and back, and you're finding the communities along these highways are building along the edge of the highway nice pull-off areas. They have gas stations, they have restaurants, they've got, you know, places for the trucks to pull in, they've got the semis and all that. And I mean, they are busy. And I'm hoping we're not getting rid of that kind of opportunity for us, because we're sort of between Pullman and the 20,000 kids that drive, young adults that drive back and forth, you know, and you know, the highway's just getting busier and busier and busier. So I guess I'm not really for losing the one road along the highway there to have an opportunity to have that develop in Othello, where business can grow and take advantage of that. Because they pull off of one exit, they drive all the way down that road, like at the Dalles, and then they get back on at the end. I mean, that is a busy road. A lot of people visiting the businesses along there. And I would think Othello one day may have a real opportunity, and if we plant houses there one day, it's gone. So I guess that's my comment on that. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I've got somewhat of a concern there also. We've got commercial property from 1st to 7th, technically, if it ever gets developed. But we're going to have a bottleneck right there if it doesn't continue on up to 14th and come out the same way. Because you're going to come in there off of 1st, and you're going to come up there to those commercial places to 7th, and then where are they going to go? You can't run it. You can't run that commercial traffic through the residential area, so you're going to have somewhat of a bottleneck in that area as well as losing a lot of our C1 property.
And actually, Councilman Kaler, we do have a transportation plan for the city that does call for an arterial to go through this section of the property, and that would not change. That arterial would remain, and that would connect, I believe it's Columbia Street, from 7th to 14th, and that connection would remain. The rezone would not change that. That's part of a transportation plan that's adopted by the city, and there's no proposal to change that transportation plan. So that arterial would remain, and in fact, would need to be developed and extended for any development that would take place, even under residential development.
Yeah, but the difference is you're driving through residential, because it from 1st to 7th is zone C1 with the intent of having truck stops, gas stations, etc. there. So a truck pulls in there, they get to 7th, and then if they have to get to 14th to enter the highway again, they're driving through residential.
Well, they would be going through a residential zone. Now, again, because of the design elements associated with an arterial and the requirements in Othello Code, there would not be driveways, for instance, on that arterial. Any access to any residential development would have to come off of side streets that would be developed as part of the residential development. So the arterial would remain intact. Even though it would go through a residential neighborhood, it would not have the conflict of traffic movements that you might have on a standard residential street. It would be a true arterial.
And this is what you're seeing in the Pasco area,
yeah,
along Road 68, yeah, and in that area.
That's that road that goes between 68 and 100.
Yes.
You actually see it just down the road in Moses Lake as well, where you see the highway go through a combination of residential areas, a couple of schools, some commercial nodes, and then some more residential areas. So it's not an uncommon practice from a planning perspective. The key is to maintain the integrity of the arterial. And where I would have real concerns is if a development proposal as a result of this rezone came before you and they were proposing to have driveways off onto the arterial, that would be a strong recommendation of denial from your planning department, because that is not the intent of your traffic elements and your adopted traffic plan for that roadway. So it's clear that has to remain a viable arterial for that connection to work.
Is that dotted lines there, is that the proposed arterial?
No. Oh, yes?
That's Columbia proposed.
Right there, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, yes.
So that's in the same distance as the rest of Columbia off the highway?
Yes.
With a little jaunt in there for reasons I don't know. But. Why is
it
just
far back from the intersection?
Oh, but so technically there could be houses between that arterial and the highway.
In this location?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We would anticipate there would be.
Have we no moral obligation to protect people from the noise of the highways?
Well, you may have, if that's what you choose. That's something that you'd want to take up at the development stage of the project, if you felt that if house development here would be a concern, a moral concern on your part, then you would probably point to the letter from DOT that talked about noise mitigation that might be required as an element of a project such as this. I know what DOT is trying to do with their statement is to protect the state from becoming liable for the noise.
Right.
And so if you feel there's an obligation for the city to protect those residents from that highway noise, there's mitigation measures that you could require.
Is that what happened in Moses Lake up there when you go up and you take the cutoff to go to Freda, and they put that big cement wall all the way up through there to cut off the noise. Who paid for that?
Well,
did the state pay for that?
Actually, that the state paid for
that.
They
don't want to pay for any more.
Well, and you'll notice on the opposite side of the street, the highway, there's a new development that doesn't have a wall. Yeah, and the reason they don't have a wall is because DOT wrote the letter saying we're not going to be responsible for noise mitigation. So it was either up to the developer to put in noise mitigation or, in this case, the city didn't require it, and if the residents choose to live next to a busy highway, they live next to a busy highway.
And so, you know, there, if you look carefully, the things on the east side of 17 there are set back further than the things were on the west side. That's how the noise mitigation was handled, was with a bigger setback, because there's an east district easement before you ever get to their backyards.
But there's an access road right along the, on the west side.
That is the east district's. Oh, you're on the west side?
No, west
there's a street, Canterbury.
Yeah, natural streets.
I mean, that street was built in the 30s.
Yeah.
So that's the problem, is Canterbury was already there when they built 17. So on the other side, there's an East District service road and easement, and then you get to their backyards. So this, the way the city approached it was with setback distance.
What actual good does that cement wall do?
I guess it makes it quieter. Probably the sun doesn't come in the morning in your bedroom.
I don't know.
the one caution I would have.
I looked at a house down on the golf course there alongside the freeway in Pasco, and you're across the fairway, and there's trees along there and stuff like that. And it didn't cut down very much noise. I don't understand why anybody would want to put a housing alongside a highway. But someday, if we figure it out, someday, and it's the state has already figured out wide enough for that to become a four-lane highway.
There's substantial right-of-way there for the
four-lane highway. Yeah, substantial four-lane highway there.
The only caution I would have is that your deliberation and decision on a rezone application should not speculate the potential development. There's uses allowed in that zone. Any of those uses could occur, but all of those uses would be subject to additional land use review and approval by the council. So you may have an opportunity to place conditions on a development in the future, but the rezone should not be the mechanism to do that. The rezone should stand on its own merits. Either it's a good idea to have residential zoning here as requested or not, but not necessarily because of how a development will look.
The why, at least personally, I'm a little skeptic about the zoning change, and we talk about mitigating sound and all this traffic and other stuff later, is because once we change the zone and then somebody comes in with something that meets the requirements of that zone, it goes to the Planning Commission, and whatever they recommend after that, Mr. Whitaker advises we're just kind of a pass-through. It's already gone through the hearings, and so we lose all control at council. So I'm skeptical to approve these zoning changes, because then it's like I lose control of what we can do.
And you have an opportunity in your code to have see that happen, except for one correction. It goes to the hearing examiner now, the way the code has been modified. So you're right to some degree that by having a disconnect between the rezone and the project, sometimes you don't see the full picture. And that's why some codes require that any rezone be accompanied by a proposal for development, and it's considered as a full package. Your code does not design that way. So this is why a rezone comes separately from the development application.
Can I ask one more question here? Is there any chance, rather than go through this and then after the fact we come back to us, is there any chance that we could come in there with a buffer zone and more or less not okaying that particular amount of that as far as R2, R3, R4, whatever. So that way you still have an area there where you could take care of that sound problem, so it wouldn't have to come back to us later. It would already be in the zoning process to where that area would not be in the zoning rezone.
Well, I think we're faced with a similar situation as we had in the last application. If we begin to modify the applicant's request, then we have not had a public hearing that's considered that request, and it would need to go back through that process. It would have to be modified and reapplied. So to a large degree, you're really dealing with an up or down situation. It's either a yes or a no. And if you wanted to add your comments to the yes or the no, that might give the applicant some direction of how they would go if they were to reapply.
If I may, I make a comment also. All of this, please remember, the comment that is being talked about mostly here for a plat would be a SEPA comment. SEPA comments must be addressed. That's state law. So if there's a requirement, state DOT says you will deal with noise mitigation, city, when you approve a development, whether you want to call it a setback buffer. We didn't call it anything special in Moses Lake, just told them they had to build their houses on the other side of the easement road, which was far enough away to meet the requirement to be far enough away per the standards. I agree with Mr. Deaver that I'm not sure I'd want to live there, because I'm pretty sure those backyards can get pretty noisy. But hey, that's where those folks chose to buy houses, and I think it was partly reflected in those houses. Please don't get caught up in what are really development standards, development issues, when you're being asked about a rezone. You know, don't get the apples and oranges mixed up. The question here is, can the property owner have it changed to this configuration? And then it's his or her responsibility to come back with a development that'll meet the SEPA test, meet your code test, and get through a public hearing.
I think our R4 zones have been one of our greatest assets that we've had to the city lately. Mm-hmm. They have showed the most construction on them, the most value and gain for our dollar and our tax money that we've had in this community lately. We've had many new homes put on these R4 zones, surprisingly more than a lot of the communities around us. And I think this is a great start to get some more available, because they're pretty much we're out of our zones again in this area. And I think this would be a great addition. It's actually adding a little bit more commercial zoning on the east end, so you've got some more room for potential commercial in that area to replace some of the stuff that we're losing. With that, I would go make the motion and approve the recommendation of the Planning Commission. With a motion.
You want to read it?
I'd second that.
Let's have Ken read it first.
I'll move to confirm the recommendation of the Planning Commission and approve the request to and approve the enabling ordinance.
Second?
Second.
Marsh? Any more comments?
I want to go on record and say I'm not opposed to this, but I'm opposed to it tonight because I just don't have enough information. And the old tale about people moving in next, with regards to Mr. Whitaker's comments, I don't clearly understand that. People move in next to an airport and claim, then say it's too noisy. There's always a little voice in the back of my head that says, would elected official zone that so they could move in next to the airport and build houses there? And so that's the voice. I don't want people coming to me and, Mark, why did you zone this for houses? It's a nightmare. I moved there and I didn't realize how bad it would be. Why did you rezone this like this? So tonight, being misinformed, not fully understanding the implications, I will vote no on that for that reason.
On the contrary, Mark, for spilling. Okay. What I wanted to say is, on the 14th, they're wanting to put a C1, the lead C1.
Yeah. Right, in this area, it would be C1, and it currently is C1, and then they're proposing to add an additional 2 acres to the C1,
which is plenty. But if you scroll down, isn't on off of 7th, isn't that all C1 also?
If you go
to the other side, if you go west,
and that's all commercial.
Okay. Yeah. So other than the fact that people are going to choose where they want to live or where they can afford to live or whatever you want to call it, we're going to have plenty of frontage road left to develop. It's just, we're worried about that not being able to be developed, and there's going to be plenty there to develop.
Yeah.
And with the fact that that's an arterial running through there, that there will not be the driveways running into the residential, onto the arterial. Yeah. From the residential onto the arterial, I think.
And in reality, instead of getting the truck that gets lost and drives all the way down Main Street, we'll just take the alternative route and drive through somebody's yard.
Okay.
There was testimony at the hearing that may not be reflected precisely in the minutes, but it spoke to the study that was done for the city of Othello that spoke to the need for additional housing, very specifically housing that's affordable and meets the needs of the community. So that was introduced as testimony in the hearing, and I think that was one of the things that did help in terms of understanding the need for additional residential land.
At this time, I believe this is administratively correct. I am going to make a motion that we table this until the next council meeting.
Now, we already have a motion on.
Well, he can make a motion to table, but it has to be seconded to go anywhere.
Okay. Can we have a second? Okay. So what do? We vote on that one?
Vote.
Okay. All in favor of tabling the motion, say aye. Or no, raise your hand so I know who you are. Because I'm not, it's too close of a call, I won't be able to tell. One, two, three. Okay. Okay, then that's just not tabled. Okay, we have a motion now also. Move to confirm the recommendation of the Planning Commission and approve the request to and approve the enabling ordinance. Okay, all in favor of that, say aye. Raise your hands. One, two, three, four. Opposed? The same? Okay, so then it passes. Okay. Unfinished business. Mayor and council laptops.
You have some technical data at each of your stations, and this is going to reflect three different laptops we're going to show you. And we can unplug that one, Daryl. Pass that one around, and that one, and then yours. They're three different sizes, and they do a little bit of different things. I'm not going to get too technical because I can't. That's why you have a data sheet. But the laptops would be your choice. The mayor at the last meeting indicated his preference would see all choose the same one, which would benefit us in our negotiations and our purchase. And the cost is also on these data sheets. I think there's one at $399, one at $699, and one at $349.
14 screen.
There's
a 14 on the one. So what size of screen is that one?
15.
Is that what that is?
15 and a half, I think, yeah.
This one?
This one is
that's 12 and a half.
12 and a half.
I have no mouse.
This one?
I think all three have one, at least that one I think has no it doesn't. I haven't seen any of these before, so. But they're all technically a full-size keyboard.
just one point.
Here's my opinion on the little one.
In addition to the laptop hardware, there is a $150 Excel program that we have to buy for each one of them.
Is it going to include a word processor such as Word?
I believe it does. I'm a little.
So this must be mid.
By Office, I'm sorry. Yeah.
This one on?
Yeah.
Excel.
This is nice.
Windows 7.
It's lightweight.
All the standard.
PowerPoint.
Here, right?
Yes.
That's small letter.
I have that one on, huh? So I'm not getting it to come up.
PowerPoint.
I like it. It's nice and light.
Yeah.
Boy, but it's
oh, that
warm.
One?
Really it's warm.
Actually, that is a full size
screen.
Screen's pretty small.
It's whether you have the eyesight to be able to see the smaller.
Yeah, remember, we're committing ourselves to this. You got problems with seeing, let's not get the small one.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with seeing. I can, you know.
Grab glasses. But
that's not. You know.
And whoever comes behind us.
I'm not
going to
say that it won't happen or that somebody else
will see it. Any, whatever the expert here, why the. I've never, an Evo is almost twice as much than the Dell. Does it have some special feature? Or,
I don't know if Mark Bureau planned on that.
So that one, if I remember, that one there is.
This is the one that the police department has.
Yeah, plus the 150.
Right.
Plus the 150.
Which one is it?
That's on the annual. Yes.
Oh, I thought, right here.
I'm sorry, I didn't go over that.
Actually, that's not a bad price. And that's the better of the system.
I have HP, see, I only buy.
McAfee's.
Yeah, that's a six.
It's an idea.
It all depends on how much.
Gigabytes.
This is, how many scrolls?
High definition with LED display. Is that the small one?
I'm surprised this isn't this good. I tell you, I use that every day, all day long.
Close your eyes at the end of the day. Close your eyes at the end of the day.
He's wearing glasses.
Yeah.
I'm a bifocal.
Should see the ones he wears when he uses a computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spiron 16.
One of them was not a gateway.
$2 gigabyte.
And it was cheaper and
6 cell battery, 1 year basic service plan.
The only downside of
today, I buy that same machine, way cheaper. If it's just self.
Yeah.
So everything's done by US.
That's stupid. That new iPad that I'm raving about doesn't have a USB port in it.
Hmm.
Kids found.
Those are the iPads.
It's rather expensive right now, isn't it? Hasn't really come down yet, has it?
$900 range. I thought they were in the $900 range.
Yeah, they go down every month. The longer out, the cheaper they get. But those techies got to have it first round, so.
General discussion.
Yeah.
Laptop review.
Okay. Okay, do we have a consensus? Anybody really want that small one? Or we'd rather go to a bigger one?
It's nice, but I don't like it.
Okay. Okay, so council. So we can move forward.
First page.
Actually.
Okay.
Yeah, front page.
The Dell?
The Dell.
There's two Dells.
There's two Dells, but this is the 399 one.
Which one?
The first page.
The bigger one or the littler one?
Bigger.
The bigger, I guess.
See, I like the littler. But I can see better.
Okay.
What did she say?
She says we're getting old, Mark.
I can listen to the
Gina. Okay. Why don't we have a raise of hands? Page one, which was which one? The bigger one, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
15.
The 15-inch screen for $399. Those that are in favor of doing that one, I guess, just raise your hand so we get a consensus here. Okay.
Can you see our hands okay?
It really doesn't matter what we think now.
I guess not. Okay. I guess we got our answer.
Page one. Thank you.
Page one. That's what they say. Whatever that is.
This one.
Yeah. So, okay. Under unfinished business, I have a couple items. There's a scholarship committee. Mark, you aware of this?
Yes.
Okay. And I think Charles, because you took my spot, so... There's a scholarship committee right there. There's the information. I guess we got to get rolling on that.
Yes, me and Charles need to get with the school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, there's also a Honor Them Foundation golf tournament. And evidently, it's a Mayor's Trophy Challenge golf tournament in Palouse Ridge Golf Course. I'm not interested in that. I don't golf, so I find it rather interesting when I hit a ball. So, is there anybody interested in this that wants to take it under their wing to see if they can put something together, a team or whatever? This is on June 12th is when this is. It's the first annual Mayor's Trophy Challenge golf tournament at the Palouse Golf Ridge. We are inviting all mayors to provide a team. But this is an annual event that will expose all the cities to participating through radio, newspaper. Other than that, I don't know if anybody's interested. Not really? Okay. Okay, then just another reminder, your PDIs have to be in the next few days, public disclosure, if you haven't done it, so. And Dan?
The negotiations committee is supposed to meet on the 27th of this month, and so if somebody would like to sit in on that, I am on that committee, but I cannot be there. I will be on my way to San Francisco for medical consultations for my wife, so I will not be here. So if somebody would like to sit in on that.
That's the union, right?
Pardon?
Union negotiations?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be back. Pardon? The 27th.
Starts at 9:30.
Probably in the morning. It's all day thing.
And then successive days, a number of days, probably 5 or 6.
Okay.
I'll be back on the 29th.
What time during the day are you guys doing?
Sorry?
What time of day?
9:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. I can make it.
So Gina, you want to fill in? Okay.
Thank you.
And then Ken Kaler, you're on?
Yeah.
Make sure we're okay here.
Okay.
Thank you, Gina.
What was the date?
Starts on the 27th at 9:30 in room 3 at City Hall. Okay, any other unfinished? Okay, Dan?
I'd like to bring Port District request back on into the agenda for next week, next meeting. Do you need a motion for that?
No, but do I have three council members that are interested in revisiting it again? Or just one?
No, I am interested.
So we have two? I'd like to revisit it?
I am.
Three? Okay, we'll put it on the next agenda then.
How come it doesn't have to be four?
Well, it's up to you guys. What do you want to do?
Oh, never mind. They can do it. They're intent on giving away the city money. I guess we can go down that road.
We should debate it.
Oh, okay.
Pardon?
Well, the meeting's your guys', so what do you want to do? You want to put it on the agenda or not?
Well, I don't, you know, it was more or less put on, laid on the table till we looked at it at the workshop, and we looked at it at the workshop, and I think it ought to come back on the agenda.
So there was no consensus? I wasn't there, so I don't know.
Yes, there was.
And my feeling is we decided by not deciding.
Which is a no vote.
If you come right down to it, you know, put it on the table.
Or consensus.
We're gonna take it off the table. We didn't really decide on the issue. We decided we'd take it off the table or not. So we didn't take it off the table. We didn't really decide on the issue. And I don't want to go down the road. Somewhere along the line, somebody says, well, you guys just got all that together and decided to throw it off. I don't want to be down that road. And I don't think it's anybody's fault that it happened. It's one of those kind of things that happen. And I think in the long run, over time, the city is going to be at advantage for that, because the next guy that comes along and say, well, do we have to hook up? Yeah, all you have to do is just hook into the thing, and you don't have to put in $11,000, $12,000, or $13,000 to put in a new valve. It's already there. And so I really would like to revisit the whole thing. So whatever.
Okay, we'll put it on. Okay. Any other?
I would like to revisit closing down Main Street for 2 days of the centennial. I'm getting a lot of negative feedback on that.
Okay, do I hear three council members that want to revisit that? No? Okay, that will not be on it then. Any other unfinished business?
I think, do we want to talk about the slide now, Gina, you think? Okay.
I think we should inform them.
Yeah, because that's, don't we have a committee report?
Well, I wanted to get it out as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
It, based on the recommendation of the pool committee at this point, Their recommendation is we do not purchase a kiddie slide this year. We looked at them for a 3-foot slide, one dimensional 3-foot slide. It has a bunch of fluffy stuff with it. Was $15,000 plus approximately $3,000 to install. And it just seems way too much for what we're getting out of it. This is a 20-year decision. We'd rather put more time into it, see what other folks are doing, see what other avenues are for purchasing slides, maybe getting something with two slides so we can accommodate two different groups. But we're just pushing, even if we went ahead with the slide, by the time we processed it and got it here, we'd have to shut the pool down during the summer to install it anyway.
And the staff felt that, you know, that they were given a very, very short amount of time to research it, and if given a little bit more time, we could probably come up with some more better options.
Good. So that's the recommendation from the committee. And we hopefully the budget time the council will be consensual to carrying that money over to the next year.
Sounds like wisdom to me. Okay. Any other unfinished business? Charles?
I got a couple of things. Just food for thought. I'll throw it out there and you guys think it over. We've got to figure out a way to utilize the volunteers that want to help out, in the sense, like, when we host tournaments, there's people that want to go out there and prep fields, do fields, and they're trying to do this to help bring in people into our camp. But we have a lot of bylaws and rules and stuff, which is in every organization you do, that prevent them from doing that. So we really should look into something that's going to maybe hold harmless, that'll allow knowledgeable people to do it, of age people that probably have a lot of experience in it. Because I know, for one, when I host these things, and without the community help, they wouldn't go off like they do. I mean, and you guys know it, when you host 4th of July events and all those things, you got to have the community help. So we should look into that. That's one.
How about if we put that on our next workshop in May?
That's fine.
Have a discussion?
And in that same without,
just a second here, Charles. How about if we put, did you hear what Charles said?
Yeah.
Let's put that on our next workshop. Discuss volunteerism in the city. And I guess our liabilities and what can we do and how to get him involved. And
I have all that about put together, so
okay.
It's appropriate on the third. Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, the other thing is that we've allowed, like on big tournaments on 7th and Hamlet, to be able to park RVs and whatever in those areas to house some of these people coming into town for sporting events. And right now they're working on it, but as we all know, not everybody has an RV or a fifth wheel or any of those type of things. We need to, and if we can, put this back on the workshop, try to look into some place where we can house these people. They're out of hotels. We don't even have that big of a tournament this weekend. I have 28 teams coming into town this weekend. And mind you, I'm not the one hosting it, but I put them together, I put them on paper, and I turn them over to the right parties to get these things done. And I was at work this morning, and I spent till noon talking to people, telling them, you know what, try Moses Lake. And the reality is most lakes full too, because they have a big baseball, big ball tournaments up there this weekend too.
I agree with you, Charles, on that. In fact, I brought it up, I think once, last year I talked to him about it. Because it was a similar situation you had. And then there was some people that wanted to do some camping.
Well, we hosted a tournament that was the camp out. They couldn't even camp out.
And they ended up going over the school grounds, and the school graciously let them use the grounds over there. You know, I think it'd be great that we could open up our parks to.
And I know that.
In some areas with for tents for these tournaments and stuff like that. Because these people then are staying in town. If they're staying in tent, they're going to go uptown, they're going to spend their money here. Everything else, and I want to keep that here.
And we can govern that. We can, you know, with the porta potties, extra garbage cans. I mean, we can facilitate all that and actually keep track of it and keep all that revenue in town.
Yes.
For very low cost to us, I think.
I know many years ago they used to have tents.
Yeah.
In the park, and I don't know why they went away.
But they had a designated area, but it's you got to police it just like anything, and it's not like you're inviting people to come throw a party in your backyard. You're just, you're trying to create space.
Well, how about we form a committee that you guys report back to us on May 3rd. I've got three people right here. You guys interested in trying to get together? Discuss this, see what you can brainstorm, and maybe bring something back on the 3rd for us to look at?
If it kills me to tell them, you know, I had one team just about say, hey, then we're not coming. They were coming from Spokane. They said, hey, we're, can't come.
And you're telling me every hotel room in town, both hotels are full?
Yep. We don't have much.
We have much. People keep saying that. We have two hotels. They have quite a few units.
Best Western is out. And so is Cabana. It's only for Best Western.
And sometimes it's economics, you know, when you start renting motel rooms, and these teams are coming down on budgets, you know, it's a matter of budget. It's cheaper to pitch that tent than it is to get that motel room.
And the reality is that they're still going to spend money in this town, whether it's at McDonald's, Brunswick, Leprechaun, Walmart, they're still going to spend money if we can't hear. But if we let them go out, then all we're getting from them is the time and effort.
Okay. No, I think it's a great idea to look at least see what we think. So, Eamon, you want to try to put together a meeting for Mark Snyder and Ken Johnson and Charles?
Yep.
You got those names? We'll Dan? Well, we can't. Did you want to be on that too?
Sure.
We have four. We can't do that. So,
okay. Then
yeah.
I just go back to when we were.
You can be an alternate.
Back in the 80s, yes. And didn't get any cooperation from the city.
I mean, I remember being a little kid and walking up there and seeing the tent after tent, tournament, 24-hour tournaments, 48 hours straight. I mean, it's not what we want, but the reality is do you want 2,000 or 3,000 people in your town over a weekend? Yes, you do, because you spend a lot of money. I just came from Wenatchee, 62 teams, and that's kids' baseball.
Well, you know, if anybody else knows of people that want to get involved, out in the public even, you know, to start talking about something like this, it's a different thought. I've never seen that because I haven't been here long enough. But
it was a great thing. It was amazing, really. I wish Larry wouldn't have left. I used to go watch him play. Not that he wants to admit that.
Yeah. Okay, no. Well, sure entertain the idea. So.
You should have told me I would have rented out my backyard.
Yeah.
It's in the wrong zone, Mark.
Okay.
We can't find a place we're staying in your yard.
Yeah. Well, I guess we sort of moved from unfinished business to new business there. So, any other new business? Okay, then. Mayor's announcements. City Adams County Fire District Number 5 will meet at the fire station at 7 on Tuesday, April 13th. That's for council members Spohr, Snyder, and Garcia, Charles. That's Tuesday night?
Tomorrow.
At 7 at the fire station down there, the county one. Okay, the mayor's luncheon will be this Wednesday, March 14th at noon at the Othello Senior Center. So you're invited to that if you want to. You see, we talked about the Teamsters Union meeting, which is the 27th. So we have Kaler and Gina. So if there's any other council members that all of a sudden want to come, that's fine. But the police department accreditation evaluation will begin this Wednesday. So you know they'll be evaluated. Is that a state that comes in, Steve?
Yes.
Chief? Okay.
It will be facilitated by the coordinator from Washington Association of Police Chiefs, and then the assessors will be from surrounding.
Okay. Only 61% of the city residents have responded to the census survey. The deadline is April 20th. If residents do not have a form, they can call the following phone number and be counted over the phone. Otherwise, they will still order the census form. This is important for the city, federal, and state monies. So we have to remember the more population we have, evidently, the more money we're going to get in return. So. For Spanish, it's 866-928-2010. And for English, it's 866-872-6868. Anything else before I adjourn the meeting?
Law and Justice Council meeting.
Oh, when's that?
That is Thursday at 1 o'clock.
Thursday at 1 o'clock, I will
At 1 o'clock? Okay, then this meeting's adjourned.
Somebody got my chair, too. Who got the chair that wasn't on that?
I've got it. Actually, I sort of like it because I kept almost hitting the wall behind me. I didn't switch it, though, but I'm not complaining. Okay. What's this one for?